Hi, I'm Laura. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is November 27th, 2009. And when I first came to AA, I was nervous, terrified of everything. I was confused. And I was really reluctant to be here, like I'm sure most people are. But after about a week of coming around to meetings, something happened to me. I met some great women, and in particular one woman, and she became my sponsor. And she's speaking for me tonight, Monica. I first met her on a Friday night. It was after a woman's meeting. I got dragged out to eat, and I did not want to go. And I got introduced to the young people in AA. And she sat with me that night. She had never met me before, and she sat with me for at least an hour and a half and talked to me all about alcoholism, and she told me her own story. And our stories, as far as details go, are very different, but I related to her the way I've never been able to relate to anybody in my life up to that point. And so it's just been an amazing year, and I don't think I could have done it without her. So without further ado, here's Monica.
My name is Monica, and I'm an alcoholic. And I'm so excited for Laura. You know, there was no way in the world that the first time I sat down and talked to an alcoholic that I was going to be looking for the ways in which I could relate as opposed to the way in which I was different from everybody else. Because that's all I ever did in meetings was look for the ways in which I was really different than other people. Because I didn't want to be like you. I didn't want your solution. So it just wasn't attractive at all. It was very attractive, but I didn't want to not drink. So I didn't want to be one of you. But she did sit there, and she honestly sat there and told the truth about herself, and she allowed me to sit and tell the truth about myself, and she talks about some great thing happening that night for her, but that's not the case for me. She saved my life that night, and I believe that in Alcoholics Anonymous, we get those opportunities over and over and over again, and whether she realizes it or not, that's something that she did for me that day, and I'm supremely grateful for the opportunity, and I can honestly tell you that Laura is one of my best friends today, and I'm so grateful for that. But here's my story. This is basically what I told her, but a longer version of it. I don't know. Might have been longer that night. But I was raised in Tampa. My sobriety date, June 13th of 2005. I have a home group. It is this group, and I love it dearly. And I have a sponsor who's here tonight. So like I said, I'll be telling the truth to the best of my ability, or she will probably be laughing very loudly and letting you all know that I'm lying. I was raised in Tampa. I was raised by I don't ever know how to do that. I was raised by a super nice family, like good people. They raised my brother and sister perfectly. They're normal, good people. They like go to school and got jobs and did the right thing. And I didn't. That's just not really who I was to begin with. Like, I feel like a musician now. It's kind of cool. But anyways, all right. I can keep talking through it. So what happened for me was I felt very different. Like most of us talk about when we are growing up, some of us feel very, very different than everybody else, and I had no reason for that. You know, I was a well-liked kid. I was a good kid. I went to church. I had friends. I did all the right things. You know, I was a ballerina and all that kind of stuff, and I really wanted to be a nun because I was raised Catholic, and I just thought it was really cool that Mary, who we believe is the mother of God, was appearing to children if they were good, and I just thought that was awesome, and I wanted that, so I figured if I prayed enough, I would get some apparitions, and that was my first resentment, because I didn't get those, and I was really, really mad that I was praying all of these rosaries, and I was going to Mass all the time, and I was doing all of these things, and nobody was appearing to me, and I was pissed, but and then I met boys, and, you know, being a nun was not as fun looking anymore, and so I kind of got off that path a little bit, but I was raised right. You know, I was raised with good values, and it's important for me to say that when I'm in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, because I thought that I didn't belong here because of that fact. I thought that I couldn't belong here because of that fact. I used to think that in order to be here, you had to have a bunch of DUIs, you had to, like, kill somebody with your car, you had to be in jail a couple of times, you had to be homeless, and you had to live under a bridge. And you pretty much had to be like 65 and white and male. That's just, I don't know where I came up with that, but that's what I thought it had to be. I didn't know that you could come from a yuppie South Tampa family going to private school your whole life and end up an alcoholic. I didn't know that happened, but it does. And what happened for me is alcoholism didn't look anything like that. Alcoholism looked like somebody who didn't know what to do once they started drinking and didn't know what was going to happen left. That's what qualifies me as an alcoholic. When I take a drink, I don't know what happens after that. And when I'm not taking a drink, if I don't have God in my life, all I want to do is take a drink. And that's how I lived. You know, I didn't want to be the bad kid. I wanted to be the good kid. I wanted to make them proud. But I didn't know how to do that. And somebody introduced me to alcohol, and off to the races we went. I stopped caring so much about what other people thought. I stopped caring that I didn't fit. I stopped caring about pretty much anything. And I loved the fact that I didn't have to care. It was so much more comfortable than worrying about what everybody else thought. And in those sober moments, I would, you know, like, put the makeup on and do the hair and try to dress right and try to go and do the right thing so that the rest of the world would think that I was doing the right thing. But when I was back in my house, holed up in my house by myself, there was nothing right about it. You know, it was the only way that I could be comfortable in my own skin by myself. And now I'm grateful to say that because of Alcoholics Anonymous, I live alone, I can be alone, and it's just fine. You know, but that was something I didn't know how to do for a long time, so I would just drink. You know, I did a lot of what a lot of us do. And I stole booze from my parents in high school and tried to do that whole thing and was able to justify drinking for a long time because it was high school and college and everybody does that and it's fine and my brother and sister did it and they're cool and they're fine and they're really successful people. So it seemed to me like you could do all of this at a young enough age and then grow out of it and be fine. And plenty of people can. What happened for me was once I decided I wanted to stop, I didn't have that option anymore. You know, I graduated from high school, and by that point, I had already knocked off a couple of things on the list. You know, I had priorities at one point in my life, and they involved family and school and God and, you know, extracurriculars and friends and stuff like that. And little by little, I would knock one of those out of there every couple of years, or every couple of months, really, would knock one of those out of there. So the first one to go for me was cheerleading. Then ballet, because these were things that were taking up way too much time while other people were getting wasted, and it seemed really weird to me that people would want to go and do that instead of go and get, like, you don't get a scholarship for cheerleading, so come on. So I thought it just didn't really make much sense. I wanted to go and get wasted with everybody else. That's how I fit. That's how I had friends. I didn't know how to talk to people if I was sober, so I had to go get wasted so I could talk to them. And I thought it was normal to skip school to get wasted all day long. It apparently is not. It's normal when we're in AA, but it's not normal for the rest of the world. They don't do that. And I managed to get into college, and I stayed close by. I used to say that was for a multitude of reasons that are just plainly untrue. The truth of the matter is I had hookups in Tampa, and I didn't want to leave them. And my parents told me I could have more money if I stayed in Tampa, and I liked that, so I stayed. And I started to go to college in Tampa. And I made friends, wasted friends. And I made friends who were just like me. And then I tried to make the friends that look like what I wanted to be, you know, the good girls. And I've talked about this before, but I went to college and they were doing like the sorority rush thing, and they had the drunk girl sorority, the slutty girl sorority, and the good girl sorority. And I really, really liked the drunk girls. The slutty girls were kind of fun, but the good girls were the girls that you like bring home to mom. So that's what I joined. And they happened to be a dry sorority, so they didn't let me stay for long. And they didn't like me very much at all. But I tried. You know, I put on the polo and pearls, and I gave it a shot. But it just doesn't matter how fancy you're dressed if you're drunk. Like, they know. They just know. And my theory at that time was if I was wasted all the time, you'd never know the difference. You know, if I came in sober and then I came in drunk, you'd know. But if I was always drunk, you didn't know what sober Monica looked like, so not a problem. And so I kind of live like that. Like, let's just be wasted all the time and nobody will ever know. And I thought that worked for a really long time until I got sober and they all told me that they knew the whole time. But I ended up dropping out of college because, again, it was just getting in the way. You know, it just seemed like a giant waste of time. And so I dropped out of college, but I stayed around college and I started making fake transcripts so that my parents would continue to pay my rent and give me money. And at that time, I started to get in a lot of car accidents. Like, I totaled my sister's car. I flipped it a couple of times and walked away from it because alcoholics tend to do that. We destroy other people's stuff, and we walk away unscathed. And I gave my roommate a concussion that day. And then I flipped a couple of cars. I did stupid stuff in cars, like would run into stuff all the time and just never really thought that that mattered. Never thought that was a big deal because I was so completely self-centered, it didn't occur to me that I could hurt somebody else. Never crossed my mind. Just wasn't a thought there because I need to get to the bar. How else am I supposed to? I'm not going to walk. I got to get there. So I got to take the car there. And just, you know, the irresponsibility of it. And the fact that there were so many people around, my parents more than anybody else, who were standing there saying, let us help you, let us help you, let us help you. And I was saying, absolutely not. There's nothing wrong with me. Why do you guys care so much? I'm not affecting you. And one thing I've definitely learned here is that my actions do affect other people. And I do have a say in some of that stuff. I can't get mad at somebody for reacting to my kind of crazy. You know, it's like our big book talks about, we step on the toes of our fellows and they retaliate. My fellows retaliated, and they were absolutely right to do so, because I was nuts. I just didn't care about anybody but myself at all. And without good sponsorship, step work, and Alcoholics Anonymous, I am still just caring about myself, you know? And so I need this thing to keep away from that. And what happened for me was they eventually figured out that I'd been making the fake transcripts, and they were really, really mad about that. And so they came to my house, and they saw how I'd been living. And I was living in a three-bedroom apartment because all my roommates had moved out, so I was living there by myself. My dog lived with me, and she had a room that was like her poop room. So she would just go there because I wasn't going to take her outside. And then, honestly, she still kind of has one of those, but it's true. Ryan hates it, but it's true. But I had like foil all over the windows, and I lived there by myself, and I would deadbolt myself into this room. And there were like three doors between me and the outside world, and I didn't care. I had to deadbolt all of it because God forbid somebody came in and saw who I really was, because that's where I was my true self, alone in my room, like on the floor, hiding, because somebody might look through the windows and see who I really am. And so my parents came and they saw that I was living this way. And they were heartbroken because, like I said, they're good people. You know, they worked hard, they did the right thing, they taught me the right thing, and they believed that they had failed because they saw who their daughter had become. And so they told me I had to come home because I think that's what a lot of parents do. Like, God, you don't know how to do this by yourself, let me help you. And so they brought me home and they made me get a job, like a real one, like the 9-to-5. You have to go in the morning time and stay all day, and you have to come back after lunch and all that kind of stuff that I'd never done before. I'd like worked in Ebor. So I didn't know how to be an adult, and they told me if I wanted to be treated like one, I was going to have to learn to act like one, and I was going to have to get a job. But they forgot to give me like the responsibility part of it, so I just had money coming in and nothing going out because they were paying all of my bills. So now I didn't have to steal from anybody anymore. I could literally do whatever I wanted as long as I came back to their house to sleep at night. But it became much harder to do the things that I was doing. It became much harder to hide what I was doing. By this point, somebody had told me that if I did coke, I could stay more sober looking as I continued to drink. Like I wouldn't slur my words as much and stuff like that. And I thought that that would work. So I started doing a lot of coke. And if you do enough of it, you become addicted to it and you start to do it every day. And that's what happened for me. I became addicted to it and I was doing it every day. So now I'm like 45 pounds soaking wet. I'm drunk all the time. I'm gross looking. And I think I've got it made and nobody knows what's happening. And little by little, I'm starting to lose my mind. You know, I had isolated myself away from everybody who had ever cared about me, including my family. And I don't think that they had like stopped caring yet, but they were getting to that point of, we're done. You know, they had been going to the therapists and all those kinds of people trying to figure out, what do we do with our daughter? They had been sending me to therapy for years, but I'd never been honest with a therapist, and nobody could really ever do anything for me. I couldn't be honest with anybody ever, because God forbid you knew who I really was. It was just a very, very lonely, lonely time. But anyways, I was on my way to work one day, and I just didn't go and just kept driving. And this is something that's very common for me. I'm a runner. If I'm uncomfortable, I take off. And I have to fight that today. You know what I mean? But I've always been a runner. I have run away from my house. I have run away from the city. I've run away from the state. I've run away from the country. I've run away from everything because that's what I do when I'm uncomfortable. And if I can't physically run, I'm just going to get wasted and I'm going to run away spiritually and just not talk to you. And so this time, I had learned from a couple of my previous runaways of how to do it and get away with it for longer. And so I didn't tell anybody where I was going, because that's how they'd caught me a couple of times, was, you know, telling somebody where I was going, and then they call through everybody I know and somebody tells them and they come and find me. And it's really awkward when you're trying to get wasted at somebody's house and the police are standing outside you gotta go home, you know. And that happened a couple of times. It's just awkward. It's really awkward. But this particular time, I knew better. So I didn't tell anybody where I was going. I didn't pack a bag. And I didn't leave a note, which I had done plenty of times. I left a lot of suicide notes for my family. Never actually died, obviously, but I left a lot of suicide notes. And so I went on this crazy trip, and I didn't do any of that. And so what happened was my family thought that I had been kidnapped. Of course, everybody told them she's a runner. She takes off. She's probably just run away. But they believed that I had been kidnapped. And so for 3 weeks, they believed that their daughter had been kidnapped. And for a portion of that time, they believed that their daughter had been killed. And I didn't care, because I was on my trip, and I was having fun, because I was going to try to find anywhere where I wasn't me anymore. I was going to try to find anywhere where I could wake up sober, and it was all going to be okay somehow. And during this trip, I, you know, went all over the U.S. map, and I just kind of drove to random, stupid, rural America kind of places where there's nothing to do but go to hole-in-the-wall bars, because that's where I'm comfortable. I'm comfortable in a hole-in-the-wall bar, so that's what I found. And I was driving through Illinois at one point and saw a big sign that said Champaign, which was funny. They have a city called Champaign, so I went there. And there's nothing there at all. But I went there, and I got out at a gas station, and when I got back in, there was a man in my car. And I know that the logical response to that is to call for help or something like that, but the drunk response to that is to ask them if they want to go get wasted together, because now I've made a new friend. He's already in my car, you know. We're buddies now. So he threw me in the back seat of my car and drove me down to Chicago. And when we got to Chicago, there were a couple of other guys at the house, and they asked me to come in, and I said okay. And I said okay because they had something that I wanted, and that's what I do. I'm going to go and get what I want, whatever it is, at whatever cost, whether it be to me or to somebody else. If you have something I want, I'm going to go get it. And so that's what I did. And as a result of that disregard for myself, I put myself in a nasty little situation, because a drunk girl at that age has no business being by herself with men like this. But I was there for what I believe to be 3 days, but I'm not completely sure about that. It could have been 45 minutes. I really don't know. No, it was a couple of days. And and when I was ready to leave, I couldn't anymore, and I wasn't allowed to leave that house. And a really long series of events happened that eventually allowed me to get out of that house, because I believe that God sends angels in my life, and he sent one that day, and one of them opened a door, and I was able to leave. And I wish that I could say, and I never drink again, but it's not true. The first thing that I did was I went and got drunk, because that's what I do. You know, and now I've got a good excuse for it. I've been locked in somebody's basement for 3 days. You'd drink too. And so I did that, and I kept driving, and I got to Canada and realized that they were going to find me, and that was really not the way I wanted to be found. And so I went back to, I was driving through Wisconsin, and there was this beautiful little city called Madison that's brightly colored and clean and just nice. And it just looked very cookie cutter, and it looked to me like a picture of what my life was supposed to have been. And so I stayed there for a couple of days and got a couple of tattoos and finally decided I was going to go home. Yeah, I got a big cross on my back because this whole thing was my cross to bear. And I got forgive across my wrist because I had some bruises and I didn't want anybody to see them, so I wrote forgive. But it looked like Enrique, so I had it removed. It was weird looking. But anyway, so I did that. And when I finally called home and said, I'm going to come home, I've lost my damn mind, they agreed. They agreed that I had lost my mind, and they sent a dear friend of mine to come and get me because they didn't believe that I would actually come home. Of course, I made the call, can you shoot some money out here because I need to get home? They're like, no, just stay there. And so I parked in a Walmart in Tennessee and slept in my trunk until a friend of mine came and got me and drove me home. And when I got home, I thought everybody was going to be super pleased to see me, and that was not the case. You know, my dad was mad because now I can't be governor, and my mom was just crying like crazy, and they had the whole prayer circle going on. My sister, who's kind of a hippie, had made me some CDs of music that was going to fix it, which was all panic, which is just, panic's not going to help somebody get sober, but she had made all these CDs. And then my brother was mad because I had given our family a bad name. I'd made him look bad. And so there's all these crazy different emotions coming at me at one time, and I'm expecting a parade because I've come home. And instead they told me I was going to go to rehab, and I didn't think I needed to go to rehab because I didn't think I had a problem with anything, so why would you go there? But I did think I was crazy, and I did think I needed to go to an insane asylum, so I agreed to that, and they just lied and told me that's where I was going and sent me to rehab. And when I got there, I was that girl that told everybody how to do this. Because, again, I didn't think I had any kind of problem, so I was going to tell you how to fix your life. And I had a tumor at the time, so I couldn't stand up straight, so I was, like, at a 90-degree angle all the time and crying nonstop, like, snotty, gross cry. I tried to dye my hair, and it didn't work, so I had these, like, horizontal stripes in my hair. And I was about 25 pounds lighter than I am right now. So this kind of hot mess walking up to you trying to tell you how to live your life is not fun for anybody. And so they told me, stop it, you're one of us, you know, and kind of like surrounded me as a group and told me I belonged there and I was one of them. And they started taking us to meetings, and they took us to an AA meeting that I hated, absolutely hated it. I thought they were rude. They told me to sit down and shut up, and I was dying, you know, how dare you not help me? And so then they took us to an NA meeting where everybody got to share, and I thought that was awesome, so I decided I was going to be an addict. And so I went to NA for a while, you know, and then they started let people bring meetings in there, and this guy came in and he told my story. You know, he was one of those yuppie kids, and he was about my age, and he started telling a story that I could relate to, and he started talking about how he had been sober for, I think it was like 6 months at the time or something like that, and I just thought it was the coolest thing I'd ever heard. So I asked him, where to go? What do you do? And he told me a meeting, and I went there when I got out of rehab, and I started going to these meetings just because he told me to. And what sucked was that on my 1 year anniversary, he picked up a white chip, but that kid carried a message to me. And he may not have stuck around, and he's still not sober today, but he carried a message to me. And that's really neat, the way that that kind of works here. Or there, rather, because it was NA. But so I went to NA, and I got this home group called Freedom Recovery in DeHood because I wanted to be special. And so I was like the only little white girl there, and it was awesome. But it was full of these people who'd been clean for a really long time. And so I basically took that meeting hostage for a while and asked for their help constantly, and they gave it to me. With love and kindness, they told me the truth. They made me cry often, but they didn't care. But they did it because they were trying to tell me the truth, and they were trying to save my life. And about a year and a half into it, I'm still complaining about how I want to drink every day. And with love and kindness, they told me that they had a fifth tradition and I needed to stop it. And that if I was an alcoholic, I needed to go to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I had no business talking about that in an NA meeting. And I was pissed again, you know, like, I'm dying here. Why aren't you trying to help me? And now I acknowledge that they were respecting what their fellowship needed to survive. Just like I think it's important for alcoholics to respect the fifth tradition, which is part of what we need to survive. And so they told me I had to go to AA, and I was pissed, so I didn't go. And I told my sponsor I was never going to talk to her again. And I didn't want to do any of this stuff anymore, and I'd been doing what our 12 and 12 talks about at that point. I had admitted that I had a problem, and I would carry the message, and that was it, you know, that two-stepping that it talks about. There was no work in the middle. I showed up for stuff because it looked good. You know, I was that, I am a chameleon, so I can show up where I'm supposed to and make it look right. But I didn't believe any of it. I didn't believe I needed any of it. They tried to take me to funerals to show me what happened to people who didn't do what we do here, and that made it a little bit more real, but still, I could be a little different. You know, you guys aren't just like me, because there were such huge glaring differences between us. And I got invited to come to the young people's group just by a series of happy accidents. And I got invited to come here, and I walked in here, and there was a woman speaking that night, and she talked about alcohol in a way I could relate to. I could relate to the crazy that had been talked about before that, but I had not been able to relate to anybody talking about alcohol the way that I felt, because I never really believed I was an alcoholic. I didn't believe it until I'd spent a year and a half not drinking, thinking about it every day. I stopped doing drugs and never wanted to do them again. And this is not everybody's story. Some people, you know, if you have a different deal, that's your deal. This is just mine. My personal experience is that I was an alcoholic who did drugs and couldn't relate to drug addicts. I needed an alcoholic to help me. And so when I came here and I heard somebody talk about alcoholism the way that I felt, it was a huge relief. And when I looked around a room full of people that looked just like me, it was a huge relief. It also was very frightening, because that meant that I had no more excuses. I couldn't do it my own way anymore, because there were clearly other people who were just like me who had gotten a solution. I just didn't know what it was yet. And so I started to get involved, and at first I started to get involved because I wanted to date a guy who was very involved, and I knew he wouldn't date me if I didn't get involved, and I knew he wasn't going to take me out on dates if I didn't do service and pick up chairs and whatever, and so that's what I did. I picked up chairs, I got service, I chaired this meeting, I got a sponsor in this home group. You know, I did all of that stuff at first truly just so he would take me out on dates, and what happened there was, while I was doing it for my selfish little purpose, I got to hear something, and I got to be a part of something, and something started to change in me in spite of me, and in spite of what I was doing. And these things started to matter, and I started to be taken through the book of Alcoholics Anonymous by a member of Alcoholics Anonymous who had been through it herself and was then willing to take me through it so that I could grow a relationship with God. And she was there to put my hand in God's, and she did. She was able to make that translation from my crazy head into my heart to change this from something that I knew would work for you to something I would believe would work for me. And that's a gift that I just can't put a price tag on. You know, that's just a huge, huge thing. And so I got to become involved in this group. You know, this group has plenty of service opportunities. I mean, we've got some crazy people in here who don't do anything and smoke throughout the meeting and talk and text and all that stuff. You're here, I know. But there are plenty of us who don't, you know. There are plenty of us who were taught that we show respect for the meeting that helped save our life. You know, this meeting was here for me and showed me something that I didn't believe existed. And I will do whatever I can to show respect back to this meeting. And I was taught that that includes a few things. You know, I was also taught that I needed to go to meetings. I needed to go there not only so that I could get better, so I could carry a message to somebody else. You know, if I hadn't gone to that dinner that night, I would have never met Laura. And I never go to, like, group birthday dinners. I'm just not into it. But I went. And I went because God sent me there, you know? It happens that way. I know, it's true. I don't go. I don't like it. But I'll go to, like, an anniversary or a watch or whatever, but, I mean, we got a lot of people in this group. It's hard to show up for everything. So by showing up here, though, like, I was told I had to be at meetings on time. I couldn't get up and walk around through it. That taught me how to go to work on time and not walk around through it and not think that I was entitled to a smoke break 30 minutes into my, like, work day. You know, stuff like that. There were simple things that I was told to do here that didn't make any kind of sense, but they transferred into my life. I was told that I couldn't hang up on my sponsor and yell at her because she wasn't there for me to beat up on, which taught me in turn not to do that to my mother. You know, I got to get my family here because people in Alcoholics Anonymous showed me how. There are directions, very, very clear-cut directions in the big book. Thank God for that, because I was always one of those people that we all talk about. I needed the directions that nobody had given me. Well, the big book is those directions that you've been looking for. They were the ones that I had been looking for. And the stuff that I don't know how to interpret from the book, I have a sponsor to help me with, and people who've been here longer than I've been alive to help me with that kind of stuff. And I have to know how to go to them. That's why I like speaker meetings, because speaker meetings, people tell you their story, so I know when I go through that particular problem, that's the person I go to. You know, not everything got better because I got here. In fact, many things just sucked after being here. You know, it happens. People get sick, like my mom got cancer. That sucks. My sister moved to Alabama. That sucks. You know, all these things that happened that just weren't great. I've, you know, lost boyfriends, been cheated on, that whole nonsense. It happens. But I was taught in Alcoholics Anonymous how to deal with each of those things without having to drink. I was also then taught how to carry that stuff in such a way as I could use it to help somebody else. And I find a lot of power in that. You know, like I was talking about it the other day, that me getting locked in a basement, obviously not great, not fun, didn't like it. But the first time I said it from a podium and talked about it, and a girl came up to me afterwards crying, saying, I can relate because I was there, and I didn't know I could ever get over it, but I can now because you did, that gives it a purpose. That's not, I just got stuck in a basement. That's, I gave 3 days to God so that he could help somebody else through it. You know, and that's just cool, you know? That doesn't happen everywhere. We don't get that opportunity everywhere. I don't see that in the lives of the people around me. They don't get to say that their worst days saved somebody else's life. But they do. You know, those nasty, nasty days have been used to save somebody else's life, and other people's nasty days have been used to save mine, and it gives them a greater purpose. And today, like I said, I have a family that loves me, and I love them, and I know how to show it to them now because people here told me how to do that. I was taught how to become a respectable woman with dignity, and sometimes I don't sound like it, but I do know how to do it, and because of that, I got to fall in love with a man that Alcoholics Anonymous gave me, because they put him back together too. You know, I got to come to this meeting and I got to fall in love. And now I get to get married. And most of you guys will be there because it's a ginormous, ridiculous wedding. But it's this gift that's been given to me, not because AA gives us a relationship, but because AA fixed me and AA fixed him. You know, and it gave us an opportunity to get better. And now I get this great opportunity to go and be a godmother for some friend's son. Because somebody thinks that I have a good relationship with God that they want to show to somebody else. What? You know, like, that's nuts. I told you, I was raised Catholic, and for a long time I thought you couldn't be Catholic and sober at the same time, because people talk about like the recovering Catholic thing. It just pisses me off. But what happened for me was, once I was willing to actually say that out loud and ask somebody if that's what they really meant by that, they told me that that's not what they meant, and they challenged me to go basically on a search for the God of my own understanding. And that's such a cool thing that AA has. You know, I happened to end up in the church where I was raised, but that's not necessarily the case for everybody, and it doesn't have to be the case for you. But it happened to be the case for me, because somebody was open enough to tell me, find your own. I've never been sponsored by a Catholic person, so clearly they weren't the ones telling me to go do it, but they can respect it, you know? And that's a really, really neat thing, because I've started to realize the similarities that are coming between these different things. And I've started to be blessed with these kinds of opportunities, whether it be through the church or through Alcoholics Anonymous or whatever. One thing I have learned about the church and AA is that one does not replace the other. You know, I know that that works for some people, and that's, God bless you, that's good for you. But for me, I need AA. I absolutely need Alcoholics Anonymous, because I have had the experience of trying to solve this with somebody who's not an alcoholic, and it didn't work for me. The solution for me has to come from somebody who has alcoholism. And that's pretty much what I have. So thank you, and now my fiancé.